Ever wonder how a Comic-Con comes together? Here are two guys that know, because it's what they do every day. It's the Con Men Podcast. Now for another mediocre podcast attempt, it's Greg Adams and Puff.
It's the Con Men Podcast. Greg Adams on this side, and Puff is over there.
Actually, yellow.
I didn't even check your mic. Is your mic on?
I don't know. Is it?
Yeah.
It's on. Am I talking?
Yeah, you are. So I'll just turn that down and turn it off, and I'll just run this shit.
Story of my life right there. Always trying to shut me up.
That's not true. I give you plenty of rope to hang yourself with. It is the Con Men Podcast, where we talk about what it's like to run a Comic-Con and other things in the geeky world. We collectively run GeekedCon in Shreveport, Louisiana. It's a Comic-Con that we are going into our sixth year on.
And about to make some guest announcements on.
You're getting out ahead of your skis there, kid.
No.
No, we're hold on.
We got ink on paper. Things are happening. We're happy-ish.
This is all true. Almost 90% of what you said is true.
I think we should give the people a Christmas present.
No,
give them a little tip, hint.
Nope. Let's pull back on that a little bit.
Aww.
But that is pretty much what we do. That's things like that, conversations like that, where, yes, we are currently working on building a Comic-Con. We are in the process of negotiating agreements for appearances. And then once those kind of things start to happen, then, you know, we start to figure out when announcements will be made, when tickets go on sale, and all of that type of stuff.
Right now.
And that's what this podcast is mostly about, is talking about what it's like to pull the curtain back on those events and also maybe give a little bit of, not advice, but at least have some dialogue, have some conversation. I don't know if we're in a position to give advice, I guess.
We do okay.
I mean, yeah, but like, I don't want to tell other people how to do things. What I want to have is some dialogue and conversation about...
We just make suggestions, tell them our point of view, and then they can either take it or leave it.
Well, okay, so if somebody is considering starting a Comic-Con, we want to offer suggestions of things that maybe we've screwed up in the past or things that have worked out well for us. And I think also having just dialogue about it for those who are actively running Comic-Cons, they might hear a different perspective on something. Mm-hmm. And that might work for them. And also for people who are just fans of Comic-Cons, we've heard from a lot of people. At least I have. I don't know about your DMs, but I've heard from quite a few people who enjoy the idea of pulling the curtain back and letting them see what it's really like on this side.
Yeah, I got a lot of DMs. None of them are related to this, though.
Okay, we'll leave that right there.
Baby Yoda. Don't die.
Okay. Yeah, almost died there. Let's leave that completely where it was. So what we do is we'll talk about a couple of topics. The first topic I want to talk about today, and I haven't run this one by you. Actually, I kind of did in the hallway real quick. And I don't think you love this one. But I've changed a little bit.
Oh, boy.
So what I want to talk about from a convention standpoint is marketing mistakes. That's a little bit different from what we talked about before. But here's what I want to kind of zero in, because I've actually seen something take place since you and I last talked about this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, unrelated to conventions. This was actually somebody who is a member of a chamber of commerce, who is very public about what they do for their job and use their social media platform for a job thing, promoting their job stuff. And then they decided to get quite political and rather insulting on that earlier today. And it really backfired. And it just leads into kind of what we had been talking about before, where there seemed to be a lot of people in this industry in particular who... They almost don't know where the rails are when it comes to social media.
I think that's a fair statement.
And not just convention people, guests as well.
Yeah, a lot of social media, I know we've had it for like a decade plus at this point, but there's still a lot of uncharted territory because there's new features added and people are feeling more open and free with their social medias, where sometimes they put things out there that shouldn't be out there.
And your tone on social media, sarcasm doesn't always come across well.
That is true.
And it's a slippery slope. I think a lot of people use the term slippery slope out of context a lot, or they use it when it really doesn't fit. This is a perfect example of a slippery slope. You might think that you're being funny. You might think you're being sarcastic. But if you have a large social media footprint, or if you run a convention and maybe a lot of people are aware of who you are and what the convention is, and you make the kind of post that's a slippery slope post, suddenly it's in front of hundreds, potentially thousands of people, and you got to find a way to explain it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where what might be funny to some is not funny to everyone, and not everybody is in on the joke. So you have like a quarter of your people are like, haha, that's funny, and a bunch of people mad at you when you're in a place where you shouldn't have people mad at you.
Yeah, you really, social media, as far as a convention goes, should be for positivity moving forward. And that's maybe the biggest mistake that conventions make when it comes to social media, is that they, instead of using it as promotion, positivity, answering questions, providing information, they decide to use it as a weapon in some cases. And that, to me, is a huge mistake. I don't know if there is enough gained. Sure, there could be something gained if you use a convention as a weapon online. You might solidify, if you've got like a 20% base that buys into whatever weaponizing you're using, that may galvanize that 20%, but the other 80% is put at risk when you do something like that.
Well, and you're assuming in a lot of cases that everyone's in on the joke, whatever it may be, and that's just usually not the case. And anytime you anger folks, anger spreads a lot more than positivity.
Oh, yeah.
So if you piss off, 40% of people, all of a sudden that 40% is going to grow a lot faster than the people who are like, yeah, that's a cool thing.
Well, and if you get caught up in that, if you make some kind of post and you think it's a fun, cheeky joke, and it's brought up that, yeah, that's probably a misstep, like at that point, even if you still believe in what you posted, if you're getting people who are like, hey, that was out of line, that was a misstep, that's an issue, probably shouldn't do that, for the sake of that other 80%, or the sake of just not putting out the fire before it spreads, like you said, anger spreads quickly, just concede. Just say, you know what, sorry about that. Thought it was funny, it was a joke. It's the same thing that you see with celebrities. When they do something wrong, the first thing they go to is hacked. We were hacked. Don't do the hacked thing, but just apologize and say, tried to make a bad joke, didn't work out, I've deleted it, I apologize. Hopefully we can all move forward from this.
Or just like get rid of it quickly and hope cut it off like a, like a diseased arm or something.
Yeah, hopefully there are no screenshots.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just one of those things, like Pat McAfee always says, the punter from the Colts, former punter from the Colts, for the brand. You're out there,
yep,
for the brand.
100%, you are. That's perfect, that's beautiful. For the brand. In addition to the social media talk, as long as we're talking about marketing mistakes, for people who are potentially starting a new convention, maybe running one for a couple of years, tying together overall marketing and social media, don't try to use social media as 100% of your marketing.
Oh, yeah, that's always, because you're putting all your eggs in one basket, and that one basket is full of people who don't actually exist.
Yes, when it comes to social media, there's a lot of the fake likes and the fake follows and that kind of thing. But the biggest of the social media platforms is Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of places who try to use, and not just conventions. There's businesses, there's bands, there's events that try to use Facebook as 100% of their marketing. The issue with that, even if you pay for Facebook, is that Facebook still ultimately runs the show. You're renting space in their marketplace, and they get to make the rules. And the worst part is they don't have to tell you any of the rules.
Well, and the other bad thing, if you're you might have to alter your already pre-produced promotional material, whether it's a poster, a flyer, whatever, because Facebook doesn't like the way it's designed, or there's too many images or too many words. There's a lot of stuff that goes in there that once you give it up to the Facebook gods, sometimes things get a little out of control and don't exactly go the way you would hope them to go.
Yeah, Facebook, a lot of people I think are stuck in the 10 years ago, 8 years ago, maybe even as early as 6 years ago, the world where Facebook was wide open, where you could make a Facebook post and it could be seen by 40,000 people.
Yeah.
That world doesn't exist anymore. Facebook,
if you have 100,000 people on your page, maybe you're lucky if 20,000 of them see your stuff.
That would be extremely lucky, because the penetration rate on a Facebook post is generally about 2% of your audience. So and we deal with digital quite a bit. Your official job title is digital managing editor, and I've been in the Facebook game for, I mean, like, consulting for about a decade now. The general penetration on a Facebook post is about 2% of your audience. And what Facebook does through the algorithm is, when it serves it to that 2%, which is relatively random which 2% they pick, the way that those first set of people respond to whatever you've posted then decides whether Facebook says, hey, this is pretty good content, let's show it to a few more people. And if it gets out to like 4%, and that 4% continues to, they click on it, they interact with it, they engage, that's the big thing, engagement. If they engage with the post after 4%, then it moves up to 6, then 10, then 15. But 20 to 30% of your audience seeing a post is almost unheard of unless you're paying Facebook.
Well, you were talking about ads, so I was just pulling 20% of my head.
Yeah, if you get that much on a paid, yeah.
If you are thinking, like, as a fan, hey, I'm going to help this brand by giving it a like, you're literally doing nothing. Because the way Facebook works now, clicks and shares are king, comments next on that list, likes, reacts, hearts, all that stuff, little to nothing to move the needle for you
anymore. Yeah, if you hold the hand of an event by pressing like and heart, It's not going to do a lot. The best thing to do, in all honesty, when it comes to Facebook, if you really like a page, click on the content. Mm-hmm. When you see them post a link to their website or to a ticket link, even if you've already bought your tickets, click on the ticket link and go just pretend like you're going to buy tickets. Spend 15 seconds on the page, because Facebook tracks that stuff. And when people click and interact with something, it actually tells Facebook, hey, this is good content, more people want to see this.
And people actually like and interact with this brand, so maybe we should spread the love a little bit more. So if you actually, as a fan of anything, whether it be GeekCon, a movie, a video game, whatever brands you love, click on the content and share it. Anything else is sort of, I know you think you're helping, but you're really not helping.
Which ultimately, that's why I tell everybody, not just conventions, but small businesses, any brand, don't put 100% of your efforts into Facebook. Mm-hmm. I know it's very tantalizing, because to a lot of people, Facebook is free. And it's always difficult for somebody to understand that marketing isn't a drain on profits. Marketing is actually as important as your electrical bill.
Yep.
So like, when a small business, and I've been in the radio events world long enough to where I've been in front of businesses who don't believe that their marketing and advertising budget is as important as their electricity or their water or their goods and services or their payroll, but it is equally as important as all of that to make sure that you tell people that you exist.
If nobody knows, you could have the greatest thing ever, but if nobody knows about it, it does no one any good. It's like if you go see a financial advisor, the first thing they tell you is you got to diversify. It's the same thing with trying to get your message out there. The more places you have it, and the more people that see it, and the more places it's available, the better it is for everyone.
Which actually I have written down on my outline that you like to make fun of. Under marketing mistakes, I literally have written on there shotgun approach, because that's the best way to do the marketing, is to have a shotgun approach. And if you don't understand what that means, if you're using a shotgun most of the time, unless you're using slugs, you have a spray with like birdshot.
Yeah, a spread where you have like a target, and then you have the outliers where it hits pretty much, if you're looking at the bullseye, the majority of your pellets might hit the red part, but there's also a good pattern on the outsides of it as well.
So that, what you want to do is you want to hit that bullseye, whatever you identify as your best option, and maybe that is Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Facebook is your best marketing option, but you can't limit yourself to just Facebook. You have to, and that doesn't mean, maybe, let me take that back, social media. Because what I don't mean is, I don't mean putting all of your marketing budget in, don't put it all in Facebook, put it in Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. No, put portion of it in social media and decide within social media where that's going to go. Then make sure that you have budget left over to do radio, to do print. And when I say print, I don't mean putting it in the newspaper, because a lot of 85-year-olds aren't generally coming to Comic-Con, so newspapers probably aren't the best way. But when I mean print, I mean go find a great printer and hopefully get somebody really, really important. Get somebody who's got some kind of graphic design ability, whether that's inside your group as a convention or whether that's finding a printer that you can work with who has a graphic designer. Make sure it looks good, it's legible, and has all the information you need. Make sure the name of your event is on there. Mm-hmm. Make sure the location of your event and the dates and where to get tickets. I have seen countless posters for events that's missing. It misses one of those elements.
Oh, I can think of a certain local organization who spent money on billboards, had them all over town, and didn't say when it was, or what it was. It was just the logo with a like background. And it was like, well, what are you selling here, kids?
And I've seen advertisements that have a big, busy logo that doesn't tell you exactly what the event is. It's just a logo that you can't read from a distance. And then it's got the dates, but it doesn't tell you where to buy the tickets.
Yeah.
Like, those are all very important things. But when I say print, I mean you have to get posters done, whether they're 5x7 flyers, 11x17 posters. Get images together, get them up, and get them in high traffic areas for your people. If you're doing a comic convention, find your local game stores, find your local comic book shop. Get businesses that fit your brand and get your stuff there. But don't just do that either. Don't just do Facebook and some posters. Make sure that you have a shotgun approach to it. If you can afford TV, I know that TV is very difficult. There's a lot of production costs. A lot of people can do YouTube videos now, but you can't really throw a YouTube video onto TV. And if you're going to spend the money for... Because the way that TV works now, there are only three or four things that you can put an ad on TV and have it seen.
Yeah.
Like live sporting events, live award shows.
Anything that's must-watch programming. I think if it's something that's TiVo-able...
Yeah,
that's probably a waste.
And must watch is still kind of question mark, because a lot of people consider like broadcast TV shows, like big shows on ABC, like those are must watch. It must watch, but not necessarily at 8 o'clock
on Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. You're going to watch it, but you're going to watch it on your DVR and you're going to fast forward through everything. So in order to get an impact on TV, you really have to do it like during the football games, during March Madness, during the Super... That's why Super Bowl ads are so expensive.
Because
it's the only time that you know for sure you're going to get
there's
in front
gonna
of people.
There's going to be 30 million people watching this program for 3.5 hours.
They're not DVRing it.
Yeah.
They're literally going to be watching it. And that's why like the Golden Globes is important. And actually, to be honest, when it comes to a Comic-Con, I think things like the Academy Awards, the Grammys, and the Golden Globes are underrated if you're going to do TV. Because the people who are predisposed to watch those type of shows, they're interested in movies. They're interested in TV. So if you have celebrity guests from movies and TV, put it in front of the people who are clearly watching the shows that are awarding people for participating in those formats. Like that just, to me, makes a whole lot of sense. I think putting it in live sporting events makes a lot of sense. But again, that's so expensive for a lot of shows that it makes more sense to prioritize print, social media, and radio over all of the other, over TV, even billboards.
Hit or miss, depending on your city and what the travel patterns are. But that goes back to what we were talking about a couple of episodes, where if you know where you're operating out of and you know people's habits, you have a better idea of what you need to do. Like if you know... Hey, this comic book store is always busy. This road's always busy. And people are always interacting with this place or that place. You kind of know where you need to fire your shots as opposed to just shooting in the dark and hoping for the best.
Yeah, if you live a state away and you're thinking about some billboards and you just buy some billboards and you realize they've ended up in neighborhoods on... I mean, you can be told that these are high traffic areas and this many cars will drive by. But that... I mean, unless
you have to be in front of the right traffic, though.
Yeah, but also if you're not there, you don't actually know. And then if you're not in that city, you also run into the idea that there's 10,000 cars that drive by this every afternoon. And then you show up actually to find your billboard because you're in Mississippi and you're trying to run an event in Louisiana. And you show up 1 week and find out, oh, there's construction on this road. and nobody has driven down it in 2 weeks, but yet you bought the billboard campaign. And we could get into the whole, like, the digital billboards versus the static billboards. I love the digital billboards that we've done. We've got a great billboard partner, and they've done tremendous work in getting the digital billboards. They just look so good. And I'm not saying that there's a problem with traditional billboards. I just personally have a preference to the digital ones. So, I think that's pretty much. Is there anything else?
As far as this goes, not really. I mean, we covered all the basics. Get the word out there and don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Maybe the last thing that I'll say on marketing is...
And don't be too snarky.
Yeah, that big time. And don't be afraid to give tickets away.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to give away like a family 4-pack, a family 5-pack. And a great way to do that is to partner with other organizations. I'll say radio again because I truly believe that radio, I mean, we're partial to it. But I think radio is such a great partner. If you can provide tickets for giveaways with your local radio stations,
you can get a lot of mileage.
You can get a lot of mileage out of those and through their social media as well. So if you're all in on social media, you can leverage that too. But I would say always make sure that you are completely comfortable with giving tickets away. And if you're a big enough show to have swag, if you got t-shirts and keychains and stickers and bags, give those away as well. Like, get your logo out in front of people.
There's a reason that those things have existed for 100 years now.
Yeah.
And it's because they work. There's a reason why Hollywood still puts, like, Sin City t-shirts out or whatever the case may be. Now they figured out people are, you know, going to buy the Baby Yoda as opposed to give them away. But those things exist because what is that? Let me look it up. I have this phone in my hand. Oh, that's a show here. Well, hell, I'm free that weekend. I'll buy tickets.
Always, always, always make sure that you are comfortable giving stuff away. We'll move on to our second topic, and this is one that you specifically picked. I'm sure there's something behind this one.
Not really.
Oh, really? You just fired this away?
Yeah.
It might have something to do with the weird shopping spree you've had as of late.
I have been buying quite a bit of comic books here lately. After not buying a single comic book for like 2 years, I've just been on a...
That's a lie. So what you have asked us to talk about today is your personal favorite comic book character. And you have shown me quite a bit of what you have purchased over the last few
days. Well, I said top five, technically.
Oh, you want to do top five?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have yours off the top of your head?
I do. Because okay. It's been the same since I was like 8.
Well, hold on. I got to think this through because this is, you know how I am when it comes to lists.
I got
to
write it out. I'm so special.
I got to think about it. So why don't you go ahead and fire yours off?
Captain Overanalyze. I don't think he's a real comic book character, but if anybody wants to do a comic book, Greg would be the perfect basis for your character.
I don't like your attitude right now.
I bet you don't. Let's see. My top five in no particular order. Well, kind of in order.
Are we doing heroes or villains?
Heroes. Yeah, let's go with heroes for this time. We'll save the villains for another topic. Top five characters. I'm going to go Batman, Daredevil, Punisher, Swamp Thing, Spider-Man.
Is that in an order?
I mean, it's pretty close to the actual order, so.
So let me write down who your number one is.
Batman. Definitely Batman. How could it not be Batman?
Oh, God, this is tough.
Really?
Yeah, because now I'm stuck on... I thought I had it before I opened my dumb mouth.
Well, there's a shocker.
I had it. This would be done if we were doing just comic book characters and not just heroes, because if I could put the villains on here, we'd be done. I'm kind of struggling here. 4 and 5 could be... So many people.
Well, I could always, you know, like on my list, I could add a Constantine, who I love. I could add a Nightwing. I mean, there's a lot of people, but I think the guys I listed are just people that make me happy. And I, you know, no matter who the artist is, no matter who the writer is, no matter how good or bad the movie is, I will watch it every single time.
So I almost don't want to put a 4 and 5.
Do it. It's a top five list. You have to have a 4 and 5.
Because I'm going to get it wrong, and then I'm going to have to come back. And
how
I'm
do you
have,
have
to...
it? How do you get your personal favorites wrong? This is subjective. There's no right or wrong here.
Hang on. Like, 1 through 3 is easy. 1 through 3 is a lock. I'm going to say the wrong person, and I'm going to realize it after the fact.
See, folks, this is what I deal with. Mr. Neurotic, he's like a bigger Woody Allen.
Trying to figure out, like, so, I mean, if we base it just on TV...
We're basing it on your enjoyability.
I know, but like, oh, man, this is so hard.
Would you spend X amount of money on 4 and 5?
What do you mean X amount of money?
Well, if you were going to go buy a comic book or a movie prop or whatever, would you spend a lot of money on 4 and 5? Because on my 4 and 5, I totally would. 1 through 5.
Okay, so who would your 4 and 5 be?
Well, I told you it would be number 1, Batman. Number 2, Daredevil. Number 3, Punisher. Number 4, Swamp Thing. Number 5, Spider-Man.
Okay, so it's in the... So Spider-Man, okay. All right, well, I'll start with 5. And this one, again, could be easily influenced one way or the other. Wolverine.
That's a good choice.
Wolverine, I think, is...
Who doesn't love Logan?
But that could be easily manipulated. I mean, So here's my thing. Like, I'm Old Man Logan and X-Men the Animated Series. Like, X-Men the Animated Series was so big for me as a kid and as a geek. And the way that Wolverine was done in that show was so well done. And then Old Man Logan has to be my favorite Wolverine comic book arc of all time. Yeah. And it's one of my favorite comic book arcs, period.
It's definitely a good one. If you have not picked up the trade paperback or you've never read the story, find it, read it. It is totally worth it.
And Dark Wolverine, too. So that's, yeah, there's number 4 is Punisher.
Punisher is awesome.
And again, I could go back and forth on Punisher. Like, there could be somebody could say something when they listen back to this and they're going to send me a DM and say, well, what about this guy? Could go in the Punisher Wolverine slot easily.
All I know is I own more Punisher and Daredevil comics than I do any other brand.
Number 3, probably Odd. You've seen me buy, I think, his origin, not his origin, but his first appearance. You've probably personally seen me buy his origin twice.
Are we talking about Deadpool?
No, Gambit.
Oh, yeah.
Gambit, to me, has all the way back to X-Men the Animated Series, again, that was huge for me as a kid. And then when I was first able to actually get my hands on his first appearance, and there are technically 2, because there's technically the annual book that has him in the shadows at the end.
Yeah, the cameo versus the actual full
and then the actual
appearance.
266, I believe.
That sounds right.
I think I own it, and it's in the office. Number 2 is Batman. Can't argue against Batman.
How can you not have Batman in your top 5? He's such a rich character.
Batman's, I mean, whether it's movies, the animated series, or the comic books.
It's all good. Even the crappy Val Kilmer one wasn't bad.
No, that was, yeah. Better than George Clooney.
But, I mean, even that craptacular movie wasn't that bad in
Actually,
the grand
it was.
Scheme.
The George Clooney movie was that bad.
Oh, no, it's terrible. I'm just saying it's an enjoyable terrible, because Batman makes everything enjoyable.
And the number 1, you already said his name, Deadpool. Anyone who's known me probably for any extended period of time, Deadpool has been my number 1 since he wasn't a hero, since Deadpool was the villain. I grew up loving Deadpool, and actually, oddly enough, the thing that got me onto Deadpool was actually 2 things. It was the action figure, and it was the trading cards, the Marvel trading cards from the early 90s. I had a particular card, and I wish I could remember what set it was, but there's this image of Deadpool coming off from the top of a building with his 2 swords that was like my favorite card ever.
I think they gave those away in Wizard Magazine, didn't
no,
they?
No, so there is a Deadpool card. It's not that one. X-Force number 1. There's a bagged, a poly-bagged X-Force, and maybe it wasn't 1. But
it was 1 or 2.
I think it's 1. it one had cards that were in the poly bag, and there are Deadpool cards in there. I know because I own copies of that book with the Deadpool cards in it. So, like, if you could see the Deadpool card on the back, you knew that that was the one you wanted, at least for me as a kid. And they're like dollar bin books.
Yeah.
So you could easily find them. But X-Force 2 is the second appearance of Deadpool, and New Mutants 98, of course, the first appearance. I have a wall in my house that is Deadpool books.
Didn't George Perez do you a little sketch?
I had George Perez do an Infinity Gauntlet cover of Deadpool with the Infinity Gauntlet on. So I have that. I also have, from way back in the day when I was working on my first Comic-Con event, Daniel Way was the writer on Deadpool at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a little sketch on the cover of Deadpool 13, which he wrote some profanity on there. And the one of the artists on that book was John Lucas, who we've had at GeekCon, who mm-hmm. I brought the same book to and had him add his part to it. So I've got the majority of the creative team from that issue on that cover. I have Victor Gishler, who has signed a couple of the Lady Deadpool first appearances for me. Brian Posehn, the comedian, was the writer on one of the Deadpool storylines, and I have his signature on issue one. And actually, the blank cover that George Perez did is also signed by Brian Posehn.
Huh, look at you go.
Way too much. So as much as I make fun of you for the money that you've poured into Swamp Thing and Daredevil and Punisher, I really have no room to talk.
No. No, you don't.
But that's a hard list for me to do because, like I said, I'm going to get done with this. And in 30 minutes, I'm going to come down the hallway and go, I can't believe I forgot blank, whoever it is.
I can see. I almost really messed you up. We'll have to save this till like next week or the week after. Favorite storylines.
You will have to tell me like 48 hours before we do that one because I will have to take time. Actually, you know what? I might be able to, I might know my number one right now. Nope, check that. I just thought of another one. I will need time.
I know my number one. It might be difficult 2 through 5.
I can guess what book your number one comes out of.
Which one? What is it?
Actually, now because you gave me that look, I was going to say Punisher, but now I'm thinking maybe Daredevil just because of the look you gave me.
Mm-mm.
Is it neither?
Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing. It is the greatest creative effort in comic books history. And if you pair it with the artwork that's inside, it is incredible. But you were close because Daredevil definitely comes in at number two.
I think I've got a three-way running tie right now in my head of Secret Invasion, House of M, and Green Lantern's Blackest Night.
Those are three solid choices.
Blackest Night might be number one, but I love Secret Invasion. And I kind of love Secret Invasion because of what happened after. It depends on where I have to cut it off. Like, do I get all the Secret Invasion buildup, and do I get Dark Avengers?
You get the arc. The arc of the story there.
I don't like your specifics. We'll argue about those as we take a very short commercial break.
The Con Men Podcast is brought to you by GeeksCon, Shreveport's Comic-Con. You can find ticket and vendor info at geekscon.com.
All right, it is the Con Men Podcast. Rick Adams over here and Puff over there. We are to our Tell a Story segment where we grab our Chewbacca head. We've got a bunch of GeekCon topics from previous GeekCons inside here. We reach in and we draw one, and then we talk about either our favorite something from a GeekCon of the past, or I don't even remember what all the other ideas that are in here. So let me go ahead and get our winner, and like last time we might have to pick another one depending on how short or long this one goes. Oddly enough, this one kind of fits into the debate that we just had, sort of in a way. Favorite GeekedCon comic book artist that we've had.
Oh.
And I think our answer is the same on both, so this might be a short one and I might have to grab another one.
George Perez.
George Perez.
Not only George Perez was the nicest human being on planet Earth. I mean, Mick Foley was pretty awesome. Billy West was kind of awesome. Like, we've had a lot of nice
people. We've had a lot of really nice people.
We've had a lot of really nice people. But George Perez was literally the nicest human being. Like, our friend Randall was getting married. And, you know, George's eyesight's not the greatest. You know, he's had a lot of health issues. So he was basically just doing, you know, head sketches without a whole lot of detail or color just because, you know, it hurts him to really focus. You know,
I don't think he added a lot of color at all that weekend, did he?
No, very few, unless he was super into it or, like, you know, they told him, hey, this is a wedding present for Randall. He's a huge Captain America fan. Can you do something for him? He literally did a full body sketch with all this intricate detail. He colored it. I mean, it hurt him to do it, but because he's such a nice guy, he's like, oh, it's a wedding present. You know, he asked me, are these good people? Yeah. All right. And then he just went in and on it hard. So, I mean, and there was we were driving by somewhere and he saw someone's name on a marquee at one of the casinos or another establishment. He's like, oh, I met her somewhere. She's such a sweetheart. Can we stop by and say hello? Like, that's just the type of dude he was.
Yeah, I was going to say, you actually have insight because you were basically his personal assistant for 3 days.
Well, not just that. I'm the guy. Because I don't remember how I got his contact info, but I started talking to him from the jump, and he was just a nice dude. Like, what is this event? Sure, I'm down as long as I'm not. Just get me all the detail. Like, even from like the first, like
the booking process, yeah. He was super nice.
Hey, is this George Perez? Yeah, I run my own Facebook page. What can I do for you, bud? Like, it was just, he's that dude. He's just so awesome.
Yeah, and like we just got done talking about the whole Deadpool thing. Like he did the Deadpool up for me. He added color to that Deadpool. Mm-hmm. He was super nice. Not just to us, because in all honesty, we do see a lot of sides. We see probably more extremes on the sides of the guests. We will see the extreme of the anger, but we'll also see the nice extreme too, because they.
I just made a boatload of money glow.
Well, either that or I'm representing an agency or I'm representing something. I'd like to come back here kind of thing. So in a lot of cases, they're very overly nice. And then you walk away or you hear from somebody later who says, that person was terrible to me. And so we see the extremes with some of these guests. And I honestly don't think that we saw extremes from him. I think that's just who he is.
I saw tons of extremes. He went from being nice to super nice to disturbingly nice.
Okay, well, that's not what I mean when I say that. So, but yeah, George, and that's nothing against any of the other artists that we have.
Like John Lucas is awesome. Pretty much everyone that's come
Roland
through.
Roland Paris is one of my favorites.
Joe Eisma.
Joe Eisma is great. Mike Grell is a legend.
We've had some really cool guys. But A, none of them have the body of work that George Perez has amassed in his career. And, you know, sorry, guys, you're just not as nice.
Maybe they can try. They can try to be nicer.
Maybe start, you know, wearing Hawaiian shirts that are
handmade.
Roland's pretty nice. Roland's pretty nice, but he's not George Perez.
Maybe
nice.
Not George Perez nice. Okay. Well, maybe he can work on that. I guess. I don't know. But no, we've done really well, and I've heard horror stories about some of the comic book artists that are out there.
Mm.
We just haven't come across them yet.
No, everybody's been super awesome and super helpful. I mean, Joe Eisma has helped us make a lot of connections. Some of them have panned out, some of them not. But it's like, you know, Roland Paris, another guy. It's like, you know, I have a good time at this show. If I'm friends with someone, we'll see if we can make something work.
And that to me, I know we get a lot of requests for a lot of guests often, and we get a lot of requests for comic book artists often. And we've talked to a lot of either artists or their agents, their management companies. And in a lot of cases, I find that just like we have a good team of artists that we've seen a lot. They enjoy what we do. We enjoy what they do. It's a great working relationship. And in some cases, it would be nice to get a particular comic book artist maybe. But when you weigh all of it out against like all of it is even. I think I would go with the people that we've worked with in the past because they're so nice.
Well, the other thing is that a lot of folks who are fans don't necessarily understand while trying to get a comic book guy. If they're active, a lot of times they're hard to get because there are deadlines. And if you work for one of the big brands like Marvel or DC or even Dark Horse or Image, you know, you might turn in some pages and the writer decided to change something, or, you know, the publisher thinks, well, we need to tweak this. So they send you rewrites and redraws and colorization and this and that. So, you know, if you're an active in the business, sometimes it's hard to break away to come visit Shreveport, Louisiana for a weekend.
Yeah, and that's across the board with all the artists. We've lucked out. I think we're almost batting. We got one or two. We're batting over 900, though. We've just got one or two. We've lucked out a lot when it comes to the artists. But, again, that's because we have a great group of artists that we work with.
You know, every year I get my annual rejection letter from Mike Mignola because I email him every year trying to book him. His wife is sweet. He's a nice man. He's just busy.
We've actually got a great collection of rejection letters. Maybe at some point that would be a great story. We've got so many stories to tell when we're done with this whole thing.
I just like the nice rejection letters. Like, not a no, but like, oh, you're so nice. Thanks for reaching out to us. Those warm my heart, where they actually put in some effort and thought into saying no.
That is great. I don't get those. I get the other end. I get the angry rejections. I get the, how did you get my number?
Well, I should probably quit giving you those.
Yeah, okay, great. All right, that's going to do it for us. Again, we're working on our convention, and if you are interested in that, it is GeekCon in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Announcements coming soon.
Soon as far as the publication of this, there could be people who are listening to this 6 months down the road from when we're doing it right now, and those announcements are already made and out, so you can check geekcon.com. To get those.
Well, knowing us, we'll probably have more announcements. Because every time we think we're done, there's always at least one more.
Based on what we have done so far, I don't know if that's going to happen.
We said that last year. We said it the year before. We said it the year before that. We said it our first year. Every year, there's always been at least one last-minute guy.
Well, if something changes...
So unless... event has already happened in August. There's a good chance there's at least one more announcement to come, no matter what time frame you're listening to this in.
Okay, and you'll be able to find that at geekcon.com, and we also have it on our GeekCon app, which you can download in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store. We've got the link on the front page of the website, too, right?
Yeah, it's on the website. It's on Yahoo. Basically, Spotify.
Oh, no, I was talking about the app.
Oh, well, yeah, you can get the app in Google Play.
The iTunes Store, Google Play, and on the front page of the
website,
right?
Anywhere you get apps.
All right, yeah, so download the app, and we'll see you next time.